a century. Why is the difference between 99 and 100 seemingly so great? What is it that makes that number so magical? When a batsman raises his bat and turns to the pavilion to receive the standing applause of his teammates, he knows that he has achieved greatness. And so we come to this threshold where we at Pitch Vision Academy turn the ball from our hip, are called through, and in a blur, in a daze, we reach the other end, arrive safely. We are a centurion. David Hinchliffe and Burns, raise your bat.
This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show number 100. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us on pitchvision.com. You can call us on
02088 167 691,
or you can email us on
mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com.
And it's the 100th episode, so it's quite a celebration here. We've got our party hats on. There's bottles of champagne as far as the eye can see. And there's applause coming from the balcony. How do you feel, Berners?
I feel excited. For me, it's like the Christmas special. The bells are ringing. The bells are ringing. And I feel ecstatic that we've come this far.
Well, it's only the start of a journey when, as Graham Gooch says, it's no good getting 100. You've got to turn it into a daddy.
Exactly. What was Brian Lara thinking right now? What was he thinking?
I'm only 1/5 of the way there. That's what he was thinking.
1/5 of the way. I've only opened one present this Christmas morning, and I've got a load of big beauties to go.
So coming up on this 100th show, we've got some exciting interviews for you. We've got Lee Lowry back on the phone all the way from Australia to talk to us about the split innings format that they're playing in Australia this year. We'll go into a little bit more detail on that later. And of course, we've got another part of our interview with Chris Peplow, the successful coach and player at Ealing CC in London. We're also going to be answering your questions, so stay tuned for that. And don't forget that the best question of the week always wins a prize. It's an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy. And if you want to see what all the fuss is about there, you can go to pitchvision.com and click on the purple advert that says World Class Cricket Coaching. And that will show you everything that we've got in our online cricket coaching supermarket. And if you're a lucky winner, you get to choose whichever course you like. Berners, are you keen on any of the courses that we have on Pitch Vision Academy?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the Carrick one, actually. I was listening to that the other day. I think very, very interesting, just his style of thinking and what he thought was, the best recipe for his success, which is quite different from many of the standard kind of textbooks you'd get on the sport, that's for sure. So, I definitely recommend that one.
Yeah, it was a good day. We spent a day down in Taunton filming with Andy, and that was good fun. He's certainly not short of an opinion or two. And he was quite happy to give it to us. And we filmed it all. And then we cut out all the swearing and we put it up on the website.
Yeah, he's certainly a fiery, angry man. But I think the quite interesting part about it all is he speaks a lot about responsibility and his role in the team and how he didn't want to his teammates down, which was really interesting, actually.
Yeah, and excellent. And you can have a look at that, of course, on pitchvision.com. So don't miss your chance to have a look at that. But at a more human level, because of course Andy Caddick is a superhuman bowler taking hundreds of wickets on the flattest track on the county circuit, but on a more human level, my pre-season nets have started this week, and it's been quite an experience for me, and I'll get to that in a second. But Berners, I understand that your pre-season preparation has had a little bit of a hiccup.
Yeah, unfortunately travelled into the Principality of Wales on Friday night, Six Nations opener, England, Wales. It's all got a bit top heavy with the Brains essay and I've woken up where I shouldn't have been on Saturday morning, subsequently missing my first training net session of the year, which was supposed to start at 9 a.m. I wouldn't say I was sober until about 9 p.m. the following day on the Sunday, but anyway, poor effort, and need to pick my gear up this Saturday, no doubt.
Well, I suppose it is the rugby season, so and you know, how many times do you get a chance to see England play Wales in the Millennium Stadium? So I think we can give you a pass.
I'll be back
this week.
I'll be back as well. You know, 197 deep last year. You know, pre-season, it's got to be questioned really as well. I mean, I'll just chuck me in at the deep end first game. I'll be all right.
Well, I've often said that sometimes I think indoor nets can do more harm than good, especially in the UK where you're playing on this track which is fast and the ball skids on and there's very little movement in the air or off the pitch. And once the new balls have been bowled 200 times, you know, there's no swing anymore. And and then you go from that when you can just cream it on the up as much as you like and pull off the front foot and do all these ridiculous shots. You go out to an April mud pit and the ball never seems to arrive. So sometimes I think maybe it's a good tactic to avoid the indoor nets unless you've got a specific thing that you're working on. But that doesn't always happen when it comes to club preparation. It tends to be a little bit less organised in some clubs, but hopefully, thanks to things like this podcast, we're turning that around.
Yep, absolutely. So, David, tell us all about your first net session last week. A story to be told, I believe.
Yeah, well, we have our nets on a Sunday afternoon, so I confidently was predicting to people that we do what we always do, which is do a bit of skill work and then turn your arm over and do a little bit of catching practice and go home. So I was confidently predicting that I wouldn't be too bad on Monday, even though it was the first session. And then when I got to the net, the coach said to us, right, I'm going to do something a little bit different this season. And I thought, great, you know, good, I'm all up for doing things a little bit differently. He said, right, what we'll do is we'll have two people in the net. You face three balls, then you run a three, then you stand at the non-striker's end while the other person faces three balls, then you run another three, and so on and so forth. Now, that doesn't sound too bad until you get about 10 minutes into it, and then you really are starting to huff and puff with all your pads on and your helmet on and you're carrying your bat up and down. But the guy I was batting with was particularly gassed after about 10 minutes. And by the time we'd finished our 15 minutes, he was pretty red-faced and ready for a lie down, I think. So I was okay. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I was pretty tired. It's hard work because you're sprinting, and then you don't get much. Three balls isn't much rest because you know you just get the bowlers bowling in turn. So I was pretty tired at the end of that. But I thought, I'm okay, I'll do some more. I got grabbed the coach and I said, right, let's just do some glove work drills for my keeping. So we did about 10 minutes of him just underarming the ball to me, just me going down into my stance, catching the ball, and, you know, getting the head, hands and feet moving together, you know, pretty basic stuff. Did about 10 minutes of that. Then I had a little bowl and bowled a few leg breaks to the third team tail enders and had them tied up in knots. And then we finished with a bit of a game for sort of teamwork and catching skills, where we split into two teams and we were trying to throw the ball to each other to, you know, to catch it and score goals at the end. So it's sort of like, you know, a football sort of based game, but with a cricket ball. Throwing a cricket ball around. And at the end, I thought, woof, that was a good session. Next day, I could barely walk. My knees were killing me. So I learned a lesson there, not to be too overconfident and to try and do too much in the first session. Because you know I like to train, Berners. You know I like to hit the gym regularly.
Pump it hard. Yeah. Absolutely. Iron Man. Yeah. Iron Man Hinch.
Yeah, I love a bit of iron. Love lifting up heavy things. And I thought to myself, well, I've been training hard all through the winter, so I'm not going to have a problem. I'll just, yeah, I'd even for a couple of weeks, I'd gone for a couple of jogs. So I thought, you know, and you know where I stand on jogging. I'm not a fan of that. So I thought to myself, I've got it all covered. I've got strength covered, endurance covered. I'm not going to have a problem this first session. Well, I learned a lesson. It's not about how much training you do in the gym. It's about how much cricket you do.
Exactly. There you go.
So obviously you need a balance between the two, but you know, I'm still feeling that. It's a few days later we're recording this, and I'm still feeling the effects of that. I know when I went into the gym a little bit earlier today, I found that I couldn't do my normal amount of deadlifts. I had to pack it in after two sets and give up, put everything in my bag.
We're losing you, coach. We're losing you. Christmas special, and you're fading on us. Amir Khan came out with a good one in the week, and he said the more sweat you lose in training, the less blood you lose in battle. I thought there's a fair statement if ever I've heard one.
Yeah, quite exactly. For him, literally, I think, but certainly for cricketers, that's a great saying to come up with.
So I was reading this week anyway, coach. They've come out and they've interviewed a number of the World Cup players, asking them what their latest and greatest read was in the build-up to the World Cup. And,
right,
you know, you've got your classical autobiographies, your Lance Armstrongs, I think. Yeah. Shane Watson was reading that. And who else was? I think Shoaib Afridi was into the Andre Agassi autobiography currently. But just a couple of strange ones to put in the mix there. We've got Tamim Iqbal, the Bangladeshi opening batsman's come out and he's on the Harry Potter trail, isn't he? Now, if there's ever a cause for a sledge in there, I mean, he's on the philosopher's stone, you know, the old Bangladeshi opener there, giving Harry Potter the thumbs up in an interview like that. It's got to be a death wish, hasn't it?
Interesting. It's I suppose it's one way of relaxing, but yeah, you're asking for trouble there, aren't you, if you mention that before going out to bat against Australia.
Yeah. Crazy. On the other extremity, I think you had Ed Joyce for Ireland, who was on the 1984 George Orwell classic.
Well, obviously an intelligent man.
Well, I'd love to see those two in the tea room. That's all I can say.
Comparing notes.
Exactly. It would be an egg crest sandwich compared to a prawn stuffed vol-au-vent.
Well, it just goes to show that not all cricketers are the same. Some are a bit more cerebral than others.
Indeed.
But then Tamim Iqbal, you know, he's not really a thinking man's cricketer, is he? He just likes to go out there and swing the blade. It's time for another part of our interview with Ealing Cricket Club coach Chris Peplow. How important do you rate fielding?
It's a massive factor. As a club this year, we had to make a couple of hard decisions in dropping some senior players that have been run machines for us over the years, but are a little bit of a liability in the field. And we've swapped that for some more dynamic younger players that are a little bit unproven, so that we've got a really good fielding unit. You know, we practice slip catching a lot because I think in club cricket especially, you know, especially if you've got a good overseas fast bowler or a good fast bowler of your own, you know, a lot of You see a lot of catches go down in the slips, so that's an area that we really work on. And as a unit, as a club, we're pretty athletic. We're pretty good at throwing ourselves around, and we pride ourselves on that. You know, and it all starts for us with our wicketkeeper, who's quite a lively individual who keeps us all buzzing around, and we try and emulate, you know, what goes on in high levels of cricket in terms of buzzing the ball around the field, getting it into the wicketkeeper, and just mimicking, you know, all the good things that you see from the international sides at the moment.
So you've mentioned there a couple of things in the things that we talked about, the role of the wicketkeeper and the having the fast bowler and the good catches in the slips. How important is it that everybody knows exactly what they're doing when they go out into the middle?
I think it's hugely important, you know, and again, I've spoken quite a bit about communication. I know with our side, as soon as we take the pitch on a Saturday morning, the captain doesn't need to tell anybody where they're fielding. You know, pretty much they know which two bowlers are going to open up in the morning, and everybody knows where they're going to go and field. You know, I think that helps in terms of team dynamic. It, you know, it takes pressure off the captain because he doesn't need to make sure that you're standing in the right position. You know, he doesn't need to sort of make sure that you're 5 yards in front of square or 5 yards behind square. You know, and if I think it's important for every player to take ownership of his own game. And, you know, if you're not a great fielder, then make sure you've got a good arm and that you can sweep around the boundary. Or, you know, if you're a good catcher, make sure you're practicing all these skills. Because, you know, as the game progresses more and more in the modern day, you need to have, you know, three strings to your bow. You've got a bat, bowl, field. And, you know, that run out, that diving catch, you know, that slide stop that saves a four, you know, is becoming ever more important in the game of cricket when games are becoming so close.
Do you see it as your job as the coach to encourage players to take that personal responsibility?
Oh, hugely. I mean, fielding has always been something that I've prided myself on. You know, when I was a youngster, I used to like throw myself around. I always wanted to be in the action. I wanted to be at backward point or cover. You know, I wanted the ball to come at me. I wanted to be, you know, in the ring, you know, in the batsman's face. As I've got older and energy levels may have dropped a bit, I made sure that I had a good pair of hands, and now I stand at first slip. And, you know, it's important to me to have a, you know, a 90 to 100% strike rate with my catching. You know, and I hope that rubs off on the junior kids coming through, and hopefully as a coach, you know, that comes across when I'm running fielding drills. You know, I don't want to see throws going sort of to the keeper's feet. You know, and you know, it's important that everything you do, you do to a high standard.
What about when you have the inevitable dropout? It's the nature of club cricket that people can't play every week. How do you bring in somebody who's been playing in the second 11 or a lower level? How do you bring them in and integrate them into the team effectively if you know they're only going to be there for a week or two?
Again, we're very lucky, like I said, because a lot of the people playing in the second team have possibly had some exposure in first team cricket. You know, they know their role within the second team. They know that they are very, very close. They know that they might be one or two performances away from being picked on merit. So when they come into the side, you know, nobody, there's no pressure. Everybody knows that they're there because, you know, that's why they've been picked, because they're good enough. And basically, what I'd like to think that they just slot in and feel that they can just go out and execute their skills as they would if they were playing in the second team. And we just try and create an environment that, you know, it's friendly. The first team is not sort of distinguished away from the rest of the club. It's not a closed door. You know, and if you put those performances in from the second team, and there is a dropout or somebody has, you know, a bad run, you know, then these changes will be made, and those players coming through that get selected for dropout reasons are very comfortable in coming into the first team environment, and they're ready to go, and they're there on a Saturday wanting to prove themselves and take the opportunity of the dropout score some runs and save when that bloke comes back. Hold on a second, I've scored some runs this week and, you know, make it difficult for the captain to slide that person that's been away back into the first team.
Now it's time for the ever popular questions section on the show. And don't forget that the best question that gets emailed or phoned in every week wins a prize. And the prize is a course, an online coaching course on Pitch Vision Academy from pitchvision.com. So if you've got any questions, if you've got a burning problem that you need to know the answer to, anything related to cricket at all, then you can get us on mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com or on the phone number, which we'll give you at the end of the show. Okay, Bernard, so who's the first contender for the prize this week?
We've got a question here from Ross Fraser. Very topical, actually, for this week's show. He's written in, keen cricket, have been playing for over 8 years now. He's never scored 100. He's got into the 50s, 60s and 70s, but hasn't found that three-figure landmark as of yet, and was just asking for any tricks and tips we might have as to getting him over that line.
Well, that's an interesting one. That's a bit of a Shane Watson problem, isn't it? Like, bats beautifully until he gets to 60 and then finds a way of getting himself out.
Yeah.
I think that it's got to be a mental issue, hasn't it, if it's happening regularly, because, you know, what's the difference between being on 50 not out and being on 101 not out? Possibly you're a bit more tired physically, but other than that, it's just facing the next ball that comes to you. So really, what tends to happen with people who have these kind of mental blocks at any point, you know, Kevin Peterson used to struggle in the 150s, isn't he, which is a nice problem to have. But if you have these kind of mental blocks, then the way to do it, in my mind, is to go back to basics and say to yourself, well, it doesn't matter what's gone before, it doesn't matter what's going to happen next. All I'm going to do is concentrate on this ball that's coming up and treat it in the way that it's intended to be treated, considering the type of bowling and the type of match situation. You've scored a few runs in your time, Berners. How do you feel when you get past 50 and you still want to get all the way to 100?
Tired. No, I think, yeah, just like you say, don't think about the score, just keep hitting the ball, watching the ball. And you see some players, they have like these trigger movements, or they have a little bit of speech that they, you see them whisper over their lips, like watch the ball or move your feet. And if you keep on being determined like that, see every ball as a challenge. And, you know, it's a bit like a point in us in tennis when they serve and they get the return and they've got to keep going. They lose that point. What do? They either lose that game or they can fight back into it. It's a bit like that in cricket, I guess. So, yeah, it's mental toughness. And I think a lot of people in the kind of amateur game, they literally get bored of their position in the game, of maybe being out there in the crease and facing the bowlers and playing, try something stupid or just do something a little bit different from what that's brought them the success thus far, so to speak, which ends their reign at the crease.
Yeah, that's an interesting point you make about getting bored. There's a player in my team who that happens. He's a former first team player, very good batsman, but what happens is if he gets himself in the mentality of this bowling is rubbish, I'm not interested in. These runs I'm getting have no value to me. I'm not interested in scoring 100 because I don't care. The bowling's so bad. I know I could score 100 if I wanted to. So he just gets bored and starts trying to smack it around. And more often than not, he gets himself out. So it kind of depends where you're coming from. If you're coming from the point of you're a very experienced player and you've got no respect for the opposition's bowling, that's a different problem from if you have never scored 100 and you're desperate to do it, because if you're desperate to do it, then you start to tense up and you start to do things differently from the way you've gone from 0 to 50. And if anything, going from 0 to 50 is more difficult than going from 50 to 100, because you haven't got your eye in for the first 20 or so runs, have you?
No, it also comes back down to actually having the ability to score 100, because it is quite a mean feat score 100 runs in cricket. And, you know, people say, oh, I've never scored 100. Well, it could well be because they don't actually work that hard on their game in the week, and they're not training that hard, and they still don't have, you know, the shot repertoire or the ability to kind of control what they're doing with the ball. So it all stems back to coaching and training still.
It definitely does. And also your mental approach, as you said there, you know, setting little goals for yourself rather than going out and thinking, right, I'm going to score 100 today. Even when you get to 50, instead of thinking, right, I've got to 50, now my next target is 100, don't even think that. Think, right, okay, my next target is 51 or 54.
Exactly. Yeah. Little blocks of 5 or 10 runs will all add up. You can't really go out there and look at the bigger picture and think, I'm going to score 100 today, because if you're thinking you're going to score 100, you're not thinking on where the ball's coming. So bite-sized chunks.
Exactly. And don't change what when you go from 0 to 50, why change it? You know, people often think, well, I've got to 50 now, I better accelerate. And then they start to do things which are beyond their capabilities because they feel like they should accelerate. Because that's what the good players do. Well, if you're not the type of player who can accelerate, you know, if you haven't got the big shots in the locker, you know, why just carry on doing what you're doing? Fair enough, if you're a big hitter and you have got those shots, then use them. But if you haven't got those shots, why use them? You got to 50 by playing in a certain way. Carry on playing in that way, unless you're getting to a point where tactically you need to make a change. You know, if it's in the last 5 overs and you're still trying to nudge it around for ones and twos, you know, maybe you're not thinking the best for the team there. But if you're batting in a 50 over game and you're on 50 and it's the 16th over or the 17th over, then you've got plenty of time to get to your 100. So yeah, I think overall it's a mental thing, and if you can just keep focusing on the next ball and doing what you do, then the 100 will come. And don't fixate on the 100, just fixate on thinking, I'm enjoying this, I'm out in the middle, I'm enjoying my Saturday, I want to get my money's worth, whatever it is, whether it's £5 or £10 or whatever it is that you pay for your afternoon's cricket, then why would you stress about it? Just spend as long out there as you can, and make that your goal, rather than saying to yourself, I'm desperate to score 100.
Okay, we've got a question from 16-year-old Cameron here. He's a medium fast left-arm bowler, and he's recently trying to work a lot harder on his bowling. He's been putting a lot more effort in, running in a lot harder, running in a lot faster, and generally getting more strength into his body. However, he's incurred a severe back pain on his right-hand side as he released the ball, and he's just asking for a bit of information and maybe a few pointers as to what to do.
Yeah, well, the first thing I would say about that, there are things that you can do, but the first thing I'd say about that is that I'm not a physiotherapist, I'm not a physical therapist. If it's pain, then you should see someone who's an expert on dealing with pain, you know, someone who is qualified in those areas. So the rest of the advice I'm going to give is more general advice for anyone listening who might experience back pain. But for the specific question, I'd say go and see somebody who knows what they're doing and can sort that particular problem out. Okay, so generally the first thing you want to look at is your technique, because we all know about the risks. Anyone who's done a coaching qualification knows about the risks of having a mixed action. That's where your shoulders and your hips don't line up when you're bowling, and if your shoulders and your hips aren't lining up, your back is twisted. So that means that you're going to be putting more torque on your lower back, which is a risky thing to do, and there's a fair chance that you're going to get injured if you do that. So you really need to see a coach and someone who can help you realign your hips and your shoulders. And the easiest way to do that is to realign your shoulders, because it's a lot harder to realign your hips than it is to realign your shoulders. So it might just be a very, very simple thing, like if you're a side-on bowler, but you're looking, instead of looking over your shoulder, you're looking in front of your shoulder. Well, you may just want to get your shoulder round a little bit more, so you're looking over your shoulder when you line up, and that will sort your problem out. So technique is the first thing. The second thing is that the body is a whole interconnected chain, a kinetic chain it's called. It's all interconnected with each other. So often the point of the pain isn't where the problem is. It's like if you have a leak in your roof, it's often that where the water's coming out isn't where the hole is in the roof. So you have to go and find where the hole is rather than just putting a bucket under the leak. And two common causes of back pain are in areas which aren't directly to do with the back; they're just related to the back. That's the hips and the core muscles, the muscles in your abdominal region. You need to have a good stretching program for your hips. You need to be mobile in your hips. And a lot of the time that doesn't happen, even with younger people, even with 16-year-olds, you spend a lot of time sitting down. You know, in school, you're sitting down. You might be sitting on the bus to and from school. You're sitting down to do your work, and then you go home and you sit down and you play games on the computer. You spend a lot of time sitting down. That means that your hip flexor muscles are short and your hamstrings are long, because the hamstrings are getting stretched, the hip flexor flexor muscles are flexed all the time. So you need to stretch out the hip flexor muscles regularly and get your hips nice and mobile. And then you need to strengthen your core, and that the core training isn't, as we say so many times on this show, core training isn't doing hundreds and hundreds of sit-ups. It's making sure that your core muscles can stabilize your body while your limbs are moving. And one of the best exercises you can do for that is called the Palloff press. And if you go onto pitchvision.com and do a search for Palloff press, P-A-L-L-O-F press, then you'll find how to do that exercise. You'll need either one of those cable weight stacks or in the gym, or one of those resistance bands to be able to do that. But if you can pick up a resistance band pretty cheaply, and you can even do that at home. And then you also need to make sure that you're warming up properly, which a lot of young players especially don't do. They feel like they don't need to warm up, you know, because why should they? They just start bowling. So, you know, do make sure that you're doing a proper warm up before you start coming in off your full run up. And stay as active as you can. That's the other thing. Do other activities that aren't involved in cricket, you know, be it whatever you enjoy, really. If you play in another team sport, or just, you know, going for a run, whatever you like, just do stay active, and that will help the blood flow to your muscles and keep things nice and relaxed. What about you, Berners? Have you ever experienced any back pain or injuries in that respect?
Only the one. I was on cricket tour, actually, and the wicketkeeper got injured, and he passed me the gloves, third ball, off-break bowler, was bowling off-breaks, got hit for three consecutive fours, but he's actually an opening quickie, came off about four steps, wanged it down, batsman missed it, pinned me on the end of the thumb, and shattered the knuckle on my thumb.
Youch.
That took me about 6 months to recover from that, and it's still not right now. Yeah, that's my only cricket-related injury. A few split fingers here and there from catching balls. I get injured from squash nowadays, coach.
Oh, okay. Well, squash, what a great activity, especially for any kind of niggling pains and things. Squash is great because it gets you moving around, doesn't it? Yeah,
it's good. I got introduced to those power plates as well, actually, quite recently. For anyone out there who is just starting to go to kind of pre-season nets and might incur a bit of stiffness, I strongly recommend the power plates, just to kind of stretch and release some tension on after you've done some activity. It's really good. It breaks down all the lactic acid in your body. And I'm almost sounding scientific here, aren't I?
Exactly. You'll be doing your degree in sports science next. Yeah. I've seen adverts for those. I've never actually seen one. The gym that I go to wouldn't dream of anything so high tech as a power plate. We've barely got treadmills that work. It's one of these spit and sawdust type gyms. But I've seen them advertised, and I've always been a bit skeptical. I don't quite understand how little vibrations would do anything to you. But you've experienced it, have you, Berners?
Yeah, I've had a few calf strains and stuff again from squash, and I've just gone on there, stretched off, and it's felt quite good the next day. I wouldn't say it's like the be end all, but I think it's a useful tool to help someone. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll have to keep my eye open for one of those and have a little go on it. Okay, so that's all we've got time for to do with the questions, but I think we probably need to decide on a winner. So, Berners, why don't I give you the honours this week? I always seem to be deciding who the competition winner is going to be. So, who's your which question did you prefer this week?
I think Ross has got a win, really. It's a very topical question. 100 up. He's struggling to get over the line. Let's hope we can give him that belief and get three figures on the board for Ross in the coming season.
Yeah, well, hopefully Ross will pick a batting course and then he can get all the advice he likes from Gary Palmer, and then he can get over that line, get to 100 with all the technical and mental help he'll get from one of those courses, thanks to pitchvision.com. Okay, so it's time we catch up with our Australian correspondent, Lee Lowry, who is a club cricketer in Australia. How's it going, Lee?
Yeah, good. Thanks, mate.
So this week we're talking about the new one-day format that you're playing in Australia this year, the split innings format. So there'll be a lot of people listening to this who don't quite know how that works. So could you explain how the split innings format works?
Yeah, so what happens is if you're batting first, you come in for your 20 overs, and then off you come, and then the other side comes in for their 20 overs. Whoever's in front at that first point gets an extra point, or gets a first bonus point.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously then you come in and you go back out for your last 25 and set the team a target. So it's like playing a two-day game for us, or a four innings game all in the one day. So it's been pretty exciting.
It's not four innings though. It's two innings and they're split into two. So you carry on where you left off, right?
That's right. Yeah. Just got that feel of having batting twice, I suppose, because you're coming in and out. But yeah, you're right. It's still just the one innings, but it's just split up into the two different sizes of overs.
That's a new format. It's been messed around with in the past, but it's never been done sort of en masse before. So how do you feel it compares to the standard, 50 overs each type cricket?
I know as a batsman, it's something which, when you're out there, because you've got those shorter split overs, you're always feeling like you've got to play big shots, or you've got to get on with things, whereas with the older format, we used to play 50 overs like the internationals, and you get a good 10 over stretch without doing too much, but you always feel that you got to get on with things, just because it has been split up in that way. And we had our last split innings game, we went out with a mentality of sort of just being, I just said to the openers, just be quite selfish at the start, and if you guys are going to be selfish, well then we're going to get off to a decent start. And we ended up getting off to quite a fast start. I think we were 60 by the time I got in. Unfortunately for the opener, he got run out sort of in the 17th over of the first 20. So I came in with just a couple of overs to go, and I think I was about 10 not out at the start. But we were flying along. I think we were 120 for one after that first 20. So sort of face about 8 or 10 balls and come off again is a little bit of a different scenario to get your head around as a batsman.
Yeah. How are tactics differing in this format from the other format?
Thinking about it pre-season, what would happen? I thought that the game would become, like I said before, you think as a batsman you've got to get on with things, but I think it's become a little bit more defensive. I've seen lower scores throughout the games we played, and I think for the reason that teams, if they're 2-3 down, getting towards that 17th and 18th over, that they're actually shutting up shop just for those last, 12 balls, a wicket going into that last 25. And then when you do come back out for that first five overs of that 25 overs, you've got that power play again. So then you can load up like you can in the first set, where that first five overs of that 20 overs it's the same deal where they can only have two fielders outside. So I found, yeah, a bit more defensive than possibly what the organisers had planned for. I think obviously with the split format like that, they were looking for the crowd to get involved, I suppose, because the reason they did it was to do it at state cricket to try that. And I think they were doing it for the crowd, possibly to a bit more entertainment. But I think from everyone's perspective in at least district cricket, it's been a bit more defensive. I know in the higher format at state level, it has been quite successful. So that's been good for that side of it. But for the cricketers just underneath, they're looking forward to getting to that level. It's been a bit the opposite, I reckon.
So you find people playing for the break. That's an interesting idea, isn't it? Because that's an idea which has come from longer format cricket, haven't you? You know, sort of playing for lunch almost, but you're playing for the split innings. That's an interesting development.
It is, yeah.
Do you find almost that you have to have all your batsmen have to have an opener's mentality because you don't know who's going to be in on the second break? After the break, who's going to be on the second part of the innings? But whoever they are, presumably, they're going to be behaving like openers.
That's right, yeah. It's we've sort of tried to discuss a few tactics along the way to try and get things right. And we've tried to have situations where, like the one I mentioned before, when I came in at the 17th over, if we had happened to lose a wicket, because we were doing so well, we were going to throw a hitter in for that last three overs just to try and make as many as you can, say, towards that last over, and then stay in for that last over for the first five of that next 20-25. So then he's at the crease ready to go, and he can make full use of that five overs. So little things like that, but also trying to adjust and play to the team's strengths as well. I know in our lineup we had, say, the two openers that are quite good stroke makers, and then I'd come in. I'm not a big hitter, generally don't hit in the air big time that way, so I was looking to probably bat around those guys, and then the guy coming in after me, again, could get on with it, and then the fella following him, again, would be a guy that could push into the gaps and run really well. So, we're trying to time batsmen batting with each other, which is more a one-day thing, but it seems to be more important, this sort of format.
And what about bowling tactics? Are they very much different?
Yeah, well, you've got 12 bowlers. So really what the team should be looking at is to load up on batsmen, and then really you can get away with four bowlers and that's it. So your ideal situation for the team would be to have even three genuine bowlers and then other guys that can make up those 12. Or if you want to go the whole hog, maybe have the four genuine guys. But I know the way things are going with the shorter format, that all-rounders are the key. So you've generally found that we've started pretty well in all our games as a bowling group, and the most that we conceded off that first 20, I think, was 62. So that was pretty pleasing. And and when you sort of keep them down to that sort of that level, then, you know, there's a lot of pressure on them to come out in that first five overs and get a move on with the board. Yeah, it's just a new format, I suppose. And what about yourself? How would you sort of go about things in that situation, having not really had much to do with the game, but as an idea side of it?
Yeah, it's a tricky one to think about, really, because I haven't seen it in action, so you'd probably have to play a few games before you get the hang of it. But what it sounds like to me is that you really need to think, same as you need to think like an opener in that second part of the innings. I think you need your bowlers to think like opening bowlers in the second part of the innings as well. And also, I suppose you want your bowlers to be thinking in the last 5, 6, 7, 8 overs of the first part of the innings. You want them to be thinking almost like it's the death. So, you know, you want to be bowling Yorkers and slower ball bouncers and doing all those things that you're doing at the end of an innings, because batsmen are probably looking to tee off a little bit more. But then again, you say that a lot of the time, if you lose wickets, the batsmen shut up shop a little bit. So then you'd be thinking more, you'd move towards maybe throwing in a couple of slips, bowling line and length, swinging the ball away. So you probably have to be quite flexible of what you're thinking. There's probably more tactics involved, I would say, than 50 overs, which is you know, there's a formula for 50 overs, isn't there? So
that's right.
Yeah, it's less formulaic, but then maybe that's just because it's a new format. If I gave you a magic wand and put you in charge of all cricket in Australia, would you prefer to see and play the 50 over, the normal 50 over game, or would you, or do you prefer playing in the split innings format?
I think as a batsman, you like to be set and don't like things change too much. So to have that period of 50 overs where you know you've got that amount of time to be at the crease, I think that's a lot better. It is harder to sort of come in. I know getting on the older side of things, I went off being not out at one of the changes and back out to field for 20 overs, and you come back out and try and get started again as a batsman. You're sort of starting to creak up a bit in the joints a little.
Mm.
So, I mean, that's not real healthy for that side of it, being the batsman. But I think from an enjoyment side of it, playing the game, I've really enjoyed that format and really enjoyed the, like we've talked about, the tactical side and trying to implement new ideas and strategies. So I suppose I've got a hand in both pies there. But perhaps if that new format got to the international stage, it might bring back a bit more excitement.
So that was our 100th episode. It's great to be into three figures, but like I said at the start of the show, it's only the beginning for us. We've got to get that daddy score that Graham Gooch always talks about, and apparently that's at least a 149, and so we're a long way to go before we get there, and even longer before we break Brian Lara's record.
But Lord Nelson is only round the corner at 111.
Yes, I don't know what we're going to do about that, actually, Berners. I'll have to have a think about that one, because we can't have a show 111, can we?
We could do it on our heads.
Standing on one leg.
Down. Yeah, do it upside down against a wall. Wireless.
We had a show, 87, of course. It's 87, isn't it? It's the Australian one. But I'm not sure about 111. We might have to have 110A. We'll have to see how we go on that. Or we'll just skip it all together and go straight to 112. See if anybody...
No, we can't do that. Let's do it in honour of Umpire Shepherd. He'll be shining down from above.
Okay, well, we'll see what happens when we get there. We're still a couple of months away from that. But that's about all we've got time for this week. Don't forget, you can get in touch with us on all the normal offices. You can find all the details at pitchvision.com, or you can email us. And well, you've got the email address there, Berners.
Yes, I have. It's mycricketcoach@pitchvision.com.
And of course, you can call us on our answer phone. It is a 24-hour answer phone. You can call us on any subject you like. Really important that you either phone us through your questions or email through your questions. And the number for that, Berners?
And if they're lucky enough, they'll get to talk to me live and direct. But it's 020-8816-7691.
That's all I hope. That's all for episode 100. Thank you very much for your company, Berners, and thank you to all the guests that we've had on the show. The next target is to get to our double century. So stay with us, and we'll see you next time.